Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And we have a momentous occasion.
We do.
We have hit a milestone where you're present.
Is it a round number and everything?
It's a round number and everything. This is episode 60.
Is this where I get a phone call and have to go run out because my grandmother's on fire or something?
Something, you know. Okay. But yeah, the joke for those of you who may be newer listeners is every time we hit a milestone-ish number, Daniel is out of town and I have to get a co-host.
Yeah, well.
And this time it's just that because of audio difficulties that we think we finally solved and...
Knock wood, cross fingers.
And it being... Tis the season, and I work a job where tis the season means tis the lack of sleep.
I was gonna say you're skating by. You're only working 45 to 50 hours a week.
I managed to you know, basically set some good boundaries at work. My job does have a seasonal aspect. As per my tradition, I still don't actually mention where I'm work, more because I don't want to have to deal with any of the social media rules at my job that I necessarily want to keep it secret.
How about that?
Anyway, we digress. This is about you.
Oh, I was going to say, meanwhile, because my job, I don't think that the owner even knows what a podcast is. So I think we're good.
Yeah. So one thing, just on a note, this weekend, okay, when we're recording this, the upcoming weekend in Seattle will be PodCon.
Oh, right.
Podcasting convention, which due to the fact 'tis the season, I'm going to have to skip.
'Tis the season, and it was $125 to register last time I checked.
It is a little pricey. We'll see. We'll see if maybe in the future I can get invited as a guest.
Well,
yeah.
If everyone is
a podcaster, yeah, but you, yeah, yeah. Who knows? So anyway, but yeah, episode 60.
Yay!
Yay! And next episode, well, depending on when we get next episode out, we'll either way will be the 2017 retrospective. Now, whether that episode comes out in 2018 is the question.
2017 retrospective. Dumpster Fire Part 2, The Dumpstering.
You know, it's when you want to play the Mountain Goat song, Thank God It's Over.
Yeah, well, that too.
Which is my favorite New Year's Eve song. Absolutely bar none. All right, but so basically to start out this week, I want to hit straight into industry news.
Okay.
Because there's two
different... Flash. Yeah. Or actually not Flash. MCU.
Well, that's where I want to start. So the big news right now going on in media circles is that it looks like there is very likely a deal between Disney... and Fox for Disney to acquire Fox Entertainment Division.
The Fox and the Mouse.
That would be a great movie.
Yeah.
But produced by Disney.
Of course.
No, it's so Fox would keep the news and I believe the sports.
They can keep the news. They can die in a fire.
But the rest of the entertainment side would be sold to Disney. Now, from a geek perspective, what that gets everyone jumping up and down about is two factors. The one everyone immediately jumps on is that Disney would reacquire the rights to all of the Marvel properties that Fox currently holds.
You mean? You mean there can finally be that... damn it, my brain went...
You had a setup to a great snarky, and it just derailed, didn't it?
Well, I didn't want to steal your punchline from dinner. Does that mean, really, that we can finally have that Captain America Human Torch crossover movie that we've been wanting?
So, of course, the funny thing, you know, Chris Evans has been pushing that.
Of course.
Since, you know, obvious reasons. Yeah. And those of you who don't get it, look at Chris Evans' IMDb credits.
Yeah.
But, so obviously that's, I'm saying obviously a lot. That is where a lot of people track to. The one that people don't pay as close attention to, but maybe more significant, is 20th Century Fox holds the distribution rights to the original theatrical release edition of the original Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, you mean the Han Shot First trilogy?
The Han Shot First trilogy.
Oh!
So one of the reasons that hasn't been able to come out is... Disney could release it through Lucasfilm, but they would owe Fox money.
Why do that when they can just pay however many billion dollars and buy Fox?
It's one of the things that could make the deal worth it. But the flip side, and where a lot of media watchdogs are pointing out, the downside is this is a huge media consolidation.
Yeah, this would mean the mouse owns a goodly chunk of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And seeing as they are the ones, their lawyers are the ones perpetually showing up for to extend copyright and push out copyright and defend all that ancient intellectual property that they've had. I mean, that yeah. puts a whole lot of stuff out of reach.
Yeah.
That means, you know, how we've always enjoyed things like Sherlock Holmes and Jules Verne and mm-hmm. and all that stuff, and how we've started enjoying mashups like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the comics, not the movie. That means those things are getting fewer and further between because there's less stuff that's aging into public domain.
Yeah. So obviously that's where the concerns are going to be.
Yes, with good reason.
And you know, as of this recording, we do not know. The deal has not broke. There's a good chance by the time the episode premieres that the deal will have gone through. It's hitting the point where it seems like a done deal because so many people are talking about it.
Well.
So that's going to be clearly what we want to pay attention to.
Yes.
Going forward, and what the possible ramifications would be. On the other hand, unless I miss my guess, check me on this, because I'm diving into your area of expertise.
I will check your I will cash your reality check.
Does this mean Disney owns Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Oh, that could be fun.
That would be an interesting ride at Disneyland.
Well, I'm just, I won't even go there. I was going more from the perspective of, I remember a couple years ago, Emerald City Comic Con, as a fundraiser, they were selling this wonderful print of the Rocky Horror Picture Show as done by the DC Universe.
Oh, I've seen that print, yeah.
Yeah.
With Batman as Frankenfurter.
With Batman as Frankenfurter and the Joker as Riff Raff and Clark Kent and Wonder Woman as Brad and Janet.
Yeah.
That was lovely. So I can just imagine with the mice.
So is Mickey Brad or Frank? And you know what? Let's get away from that rabbit hole. It's no stop. I see the look in your eye. Let it go.
I'm just going to say one thing. Uh-huh. Of anyone in the Disney cast who deserves the moniker that Brad has, Donald Duck.
Okay.
And he doesn't wear pants anyway. So hey.
With that. So the other media shakeup, which will be a nice segue into something else in a minute, is I just read that there's news that Warner Brothers has finally sat down and went, we need a massive shakeup on the film division running the DC extended universe.
Hallelujah.
Basically, Time Warner has become frustrated with Warner Brothers constantly bringing back Zack Snyder.
Yes. Yes.
And
as a matter of fact, yes.
And I'm trying to remember the name of the producer who they basically said, well, you're out. Basically the producer in charge has been, or is apparently, I should say, because this is literally hot off the press's news.
Mm-hmm.
But hang on, I'll have his name here. I guess his name is John Berg.
Okay.
And
he's the outgoing?
He's the outgoing producer, executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it comes down to these, you know, Batman v Superman made money, but was critically drubbed.
Well, and at what price to the fandom as well?
Yeah. And then you have Justice League that has come out, and it underperformed, which we'll have a lot of talk about in a minute. So yeah, it's that's one I'll be interesting to keep some eye on. obviously a shakeup needed. I think what it came down to is the realization that Zack Snyder was not the person to be the guiding vision for a superhero franchise.
In the 21st century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, we'll see. Speaking of which.
Which?
Justice League.
Oh, yes.
That witch.
Yes.
I did see it.
Cool. What'd you think?
So here's the thing. It's a complex answer, what I thought.
I've known you for 16 years. There is no such thing as a simple answer. Go on.
The movie, I enjoyed myself.
Hey.
I sat in the theater and went, I am entertained. But my first takeaway, just to get out of the way, the story is a mess.
Well, yeah.
Complete hodgepodge. Not as big a mess as Suicide Squad.
Low bar.
Right. But a mess nonetheless. But the performances of most of the main cast elevate the entertainment factor because they are there giving it everything they got.
Here.
Jason Momoa has his Momoa turned up to 11, and
I would going expect for the gusto. Nothing less. I am happy that he brought it.
And Gal Gadot is clearly comfortable in the Wonder Woman character. Ezra Miller as the Flash. Now he probably had the hardest job of any of the actors because there is another Flash active right now for him to be compared to.
Right.
And so that's naturally going to happen. What was interesting is the different direction they took the character in. So much more of an outcast. More. I'm sitting here in the movie, and this part of this, again, is influence I've got from other people I listen to. This is another shout-out to Jay Eddington from Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men.
Yeah, Jay.
Who has given me a lot of exposure to the concept of representations of autism in media and characters who, while they won't come out and say it, are coded autistic. And the impression I got while watching Ezra Miller's performance as The Flash was that in writing and presentation, The Flash was being presented as somewhere on the spectrum.
Hmm.
Perhaps as a result of his powers, hard to say, but that was the impression I was getting. Which I don't think is a problem. I think that if they did just come out and say he is an autistic superhero, that's great representation.
Yeah.
Because it shows, yes, he is autistic and he is still a hero.
Yeah.
So that's, but again, that's more my reading into the performance. Cyborg, sadly, was just sort of there.
I was going to say, they needed a substitute tank.
Yeah. And
let's call a spade a shovel here for just a minute. They needed a substitute tank.
Right. He did get some good lines. But I think he just suffered out of the least character development in the movie. And then, okay, we're going to have to talk about Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck.
I was going to say, who was that first name?
So with Superman, Henry, they had to do reshoots, and Henry was brought back from shooting a Mission Impossible movie. And
he was Napoleon Solo, wasn't he?
That's Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
Different franchise. But his character has a mustache in that movie, and Warner Brothers, or not Warner Brothers, Sony, well, the other studio, I don't know, it's one of the other studios, basically said, he's under direct contract to us right now. He is not allowed to shave off his mustache.
So what did they...
CGI.
Of course, well, okay. The first Wonder Woman movie came out this year?
Yes, earlier in the year.
Earlier in the year. It's been at least 6 months. It's out on DVD.
Yeah.
Okay. If they can make Professor Lupin a muscled bad guy, they can take out a mustache.
Yeah. There were a couple moments where you could clearly tell, yep, that's a reshoot scene.
Yeah, well.
That is the uncanny lip.
As opposed to, if you pay close enough attention, you can see all the reshoots that they did for the bonus extras in Lord of the Rings, too.
True.
Does it matter? No.
But the one thought I had while watching that, well, two things. And one of them I think I talked about, I'd heard about before, but the other. So first off, I'm watching this movie and going, hey, what do you know? Three movies in, he's finally actually Superman.
Hey, well.
Superman acting like Superman. Awesome. This is the Superman I want. And they keep talking about the events of Batman v Superman. Boy, I'd love to see the movie they're talking about.
Yes. That I have heard that complaint early and often.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, it was an enjoyable movie. I enjoyed it. I would like to see more with this version of the characters and this interpretation. It was actually fun. And the colors weren't as washed out. I have a suspicion that might be our replacement director at play, but...
You know, that there is something to be said for going in and taking these as just face value, popcorn amusement.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be stuff read into it because, you know, sometimes symbolism is at work, whether even the authors intend it or not. So yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see it. I'm curious. I mean, yeah, I'm watching it for Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa. Those are the two reasons that I would watch that film.
Right. Although it's interesting because of the fandom, and the DCEU does have a dedicated core of fans who are demanding, because it underperformed, and we'll talk about that in a minute, are demanding the Zack Snyder cut. In other words, they want restored all the scenes that Zack filmed. The problem is, before Zack had to step down, he hadn't completed the movie. That'd be a great cut, but it wouldn't mesh.
But, you know, see, all right. Nerds of the world, I love you. You are my brothers and sisters. And sometimes, really, damn, folks, get a hobby. I mean, some of this stuff, it's like there was that entire movie that was based around the idea of a movie that never happened. The Jodorowsky's Dune. The idea of this wonderful, extravagant, over-the-top Dune that would have out-duned even David Lynch's Dune. And it never happened. And all they have to do is, all they can do is to talk about some sketches and some grand conversations that happened a long time ago.
I think they actually even more tied in. I think there's a movie about the Tim Burton attempt to make a Superman movie with Nicolas Cage.
What? It almost sounded like you said a Nicolas Cage movie. Nicolas Cage playing Superman as directed by Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Where does Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter and Danny Elfman have fit into this?
Well, Danny probably would have done the music.
Yeah.
At that point, I mean, this was more riffing from the Batman movies, so it probably would not have involved Johnny, and I don't think he was dating Helena at the time, so it would have been Lisa Marie.
She could have made a decent Lois Lane, though.
Never know, but it was at one point going to be Kevin Smith writing the script.
Oh, see, now that I'd pay cash money for.
And it, but it didn't come together for various reasons.
Go figure.
But there were like costume tests, and I mean, Smith wrote a script. If you watch Kevin Smith's concert film, his campus tour compilation, he tells the story of him writing that script.
See, I wanted to watch that, and there were. I hit Max penis joke early on in that, and it was just I had to tap out. So,
yeah. Anyway, so the other looming question over the Justice League, and this goes again to why Time Warner has finally stepped in and went, yeah, no, you can't keep doing it like this.
Mm-hmm.
The $97 million opening weekend.
Which, can we just pause and say $97 million?
Well, and that's where you get into, well, again, it's the calculations of what was invested into the film versus what it made back.
Yeah.
And with reshoots and everything else going on, the initial budget on the film was approximately $300 million.
Yeah.
And then you get in marketing, overhead. Somebody did a great write-up. I wish I'd saved, because he was talking about all the factors, but where it would have to make at least twice that much to break even.
Oh, yeah. No, that industry standard is between 2 and 3 times.
Now, one other thing I got challenged on when I was discussing this, one of my friends talked about, you know, they were projecting the $97 million at the beginning of the weekend. And there was so like, how, you know, and it was the challenge of, you know, was it a self-fulfilling prophecy? And there's a lot of calculus that goes into projecting a weekend box office. And part of it is pre-sales. Part of it is number of screens. A lot of factors. So I guess the challenge is, I didn't find all the factors. But in the end, there are people who are paid a lot of money to do these projections. And the fact that they were fairly dead on.
Yeah.
On it, you know, it's, you know, I think there's the argument, you cannot predict. If people are going to go see the movie, they're going to go see the movie. Now, a projection of a bomb can people away from the theater on a casual level, but I think that's more about a Rotten Tomatoes score than it is projection of a low box office.
But, I mean, humor me for just a second here, okay?
I've been doing it for 16 years.
Well, why stop now? Just back of the napkin sort of thought off the top of my head, $97 million means that 6 million people saw that movie in 3 days.
Sure.
I mean, even out over those 3 days, that's 2 million people across the country deciding they're going to go see a movie, the same movie. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I still end up behind the guy saying, I don't know, what do you want to watch? As they're standing in line.
Yeah.
But 2 million people going out to see the movie. The thing was in at least 2,000 theaters. So that's 1,000 people per theater going to see the same damn movie every day for 3 days. That's still damn impressive.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's the, you know, two episodes ago, we titled the episode about expectations.
True.
And I think we were even discussing the Justice League as part of the expectation game. And that is a huge part of the business these days. Because the following weekend, I can't remember what movie it was, it made like half as much money as Justice League. And I think it was Coco.
Oh, yeah.
Made half as much money as Justice League was being touted as a huge success. Because, again, different level of expectations. Throw into this, now, the other thing to throw into the mix is we just, in the last week, got the trailer for Infinity War.
Oh, my, yes.
And see, there's your reaction right there. You saw it. It was like, yes. Again, very earned. You have... about a decade's worth of movies building up to this singular event. A lot of storylines coming together that Marvel has been carefully shepherding through about 24 films.
Yeah.
So once we get to that point of... And there's already a meme.
Of course.
And it involves Black Panther.
Good.
Black Panther saying, you know, the line, "Give this man a shield. Get this man a shield." Then the show's a picture of Black Widow. Get this woman a movie.
Yeah, please.
Get this guy a donut. You know, just...
Well, but the thing that crossed my mind, yes, it was lovely and juicy and wonderful to see all the little bits that they managed to cram into that 2 minutes worth of a trailer. I still finished watching that the same way, and we talked about this earlier, the same way I felt watching the trailer for Ready Player One, which was, I felt completely overwhelmed because every frame, just in that trailer, every frame had multiple things to pay attention to and multiple things to take away from and multiple things that it hinted at and foreshadowed and pointed in the vague direction of. And, you know, I'm incredibly excited to see Ready Player One. I'm incredibly excited to see the Infinity War. both of them will take multiple rewatches simply to try and get all the stuff out. And you know as well as I do, there will be think pieces upon think pieces upon think pieces about people dissecting and trisecting both of those movies. So
I have a friend who's just obsessed with much of the internet about the fact that, hey, it's Captain America with a beard.
Hey, he's even more manly that way.
So I saw one other movie, but you also saw a movie you talked about last time.
Oh, yes. I finally got to see Atomic Blonde. Mm-hmm. And oh my, that was wonderful. And that was fun. And that was, it was the chewy James Bond sort of over-the-top violent spy thriller homage to the 80s that I exactly what I wanted it to be. And it was lovely and it was wonderful. So, yes.
Good.
And the soundtrack was pretty much the soundtrack to my life for most of the 80s.
All right.
Even though most of the songs didn't come out until.
I think at this point, Charlize Theron is a fairly solid action star.
Witness her!
So, yeah, it's and it's interesting, especially for an actress who's hitting the age where parts start drying up, that she's finding a massive reinvention.
Yep.
As an action hero, and defying that on so many levels.
Can we just say for the record, though, if Colin Firth can be an action hero, Charlize Theron can be an action hero.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they've both done multiple action films at this point, and they've both done remarkably good jobs of it. So
yeah. The other movie I saw was Murder on the Orient Express.
Ah, starring Kenneth Branagh and his mustache.
Yeah. So, for our listeners, Daniel and I are both huge fans of the Kenneth Branagh Henry V movie.
Oh, Henry V, and he did, and Dead Again, and my all-time favorite film of all is A Winter's Tale, a.k.a. In the Bleak Midwinter that he did, but that's just, anyway, go on.
So a lot of investment in our past with Kenneth Branagh and his movies. And this, like the movies that Daniel just mentioned, are all ones that Kenneth didn't just star in, he directed.
Oh, yeah. Starred in, I mean, he didn't write Shakespeare, but, you know, he may as well have.
And nor did he do the original story of Murder on the Orient Express. This is one of the classic murder mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
Featuring one of the classic literary detectives.
Hercule Poirot.
And the tricky thing I would think, well, all right, I'm familiar with the source material.
Yes.
Because I've been a fan of previous Christie work, including the previous Murder on the Orient Express film.
Yeah.
And for people who are not as familiar, I will not spoil the ending, other than it is one of the most famous examples of a type of murder mystery. or more to the point, of a certain type of murder mystery solution.
Yes, that's a nice way of putting it. It wasn't the butler.
But the despite that, you know, still crafting a good film. One, remembering it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the fair point of presenting all the clues.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things while watching it, thinking, you know, had I not already known the solution, at the point where it's just about revelation, I probably would have figured it out because the movie played fair as a murder mystery, giving me the option of having the clues to solve it myself. A good mystery should give the audience the chance to solve the mystery before the reveal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, you do not get the right to call yourself a mystery.
You know, I gotta say, though, I mean, it is one that has, I mean, I remember years ago you talking about when you were, you talk about your former employers, right?
Yeah.
When you were working at Wizards of the Coast and you had that intern who came in who had never read Lord of the Rings.
That story comes up a lot.
And how he went, his job was to sit down and read those books. And his response was, it's so stereotypical. It's got the grumpy wizard, it's got the dethroned king, it's got the Ifrit elves, it's got the grumpy greedy dwarves, blah, 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 blah. But then you realize this is the one that started it all.
Yeah.
to take that a step further, Murder on the Orient Express does have some tropes that may have been overused in recent years. However, that movie is 83 years old.
Well, the book is 83.
The book, yeah, the book is 83 years old.
Yeah, and it here's the thing. It's a good first off, all-star cast.
Oh, yes.
As befits a Kenneth Branagh film.
As befits an Agatha Christie book.
Yeah, but I mean, Branagh has the muscle to get good actors.
Yes.
Obviously, Sir Derek Jacobi.
Of course. That goes back to the riff on Tim Burton and
Helena
Bonham Carter.
I mean, Sir Derek was Kenneth's mentor, so of course he's going to have him there. And Dame Judi Dench.
I will, yes.
So already we have the knighthoods present, not to mention Kenneth himself is now Sir Kenneth.
Oh, well.
But then for more modern current stars, Daisy Ridley is in it as the governess character. Josh Gad, the comedic actor, the voice of the snowman in Frozen.
Okay.
Amongst other things. But in what most people are realizing, this was probably his first serious role and a chance. You can see why Josh took it. It's like, yes, I can show I have real acting chops here.
Something that doesn't involve a carrot nose.
Right.
Okay.
But Johnny Depp is in it. And now Johnny has become... But he also plays the victim, which I do not feel voicing who the victim is a spoiler.
It's not bad saying that. And all I will say is that... his demise as a character is in keeping with his demise as a public figure. There are several reasons.
And then just finally to throw in for Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Hey, you know.
And it's so again, it's clear Branagh was going towards talent.
Yes.
As he can afford to.
Yes.
Because he's Kenneth
Branagh, yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, the mustache, because everyone's like, oh, the mustache is too big. But the mustache, somebody's pointed out, this may be the first time a film version of Hercule Poirot has represented how the book describes the damn mustache.
Yes, and I still want someone to check in on Wilford Brimley to make sure the man's okay.
It was a delightful film. Even being familiar with the source material, I mm-hmm. thoroughly enjoyed myself. And the movie was successful enough that the studio went, okay, Kenneth, make Death on the Nile.
Excellent.
So, yeah, we're getting more of that. So this takes us, let us veer from movies.
Veer? Babylon 5 went off the air years ago.
We are going to talk about TV now.
Okay.
So earlier, talking about the Justice League, we would be remiss if we did not discuss the fact that the CW DC superhero shows had their annual crossover. Or as I like to call it, showing the movies how to do a superhero team-up movie.
Yeah, well, there is that.
It is so CW. It hurts at times, but it is also an effective use of all the characters. Doing 4 hours.
4 hours?
Well, they have four shows.
Okay.
So each show got a segment.
Fair enough.
But this time, instead of it being... Because last year it was... The Supergirl segment was very much an episode of Supergirl. Tying into the plot. The episode of Flash was very much an episode of... This year, they didn't even bother with the normal show titles. They simply called it Crisis on Earth X. And it was a 4-hour, essentially movie...
Miniseries,
yeah. Starring the characters from all the CW shows.
Okay.
And the fact that it took time to not just have the big action pieces, but the quiet character moments.
Good.
Character development for the individual series happened during the crossover. Also, do you know the plot?
Not the first clue.
So Earth X is an alternate Earth.
Right.
Where Germany won World War II.
What?
And it is considered the worst Earth in the multiverse.
Well, yes.
Multiversal travels will not go there because it's so horrible. So in other words, it's the DC heroes versus their Nazi counterparts.
Oh.
Or to put it even better, DC hero spending several hours punching Nazis.
Well, that never gets old. I am 100% in favor of punching as many Nazis as we can get our hands on.
So I'm actually surprised no one's, oh, they're getting political. It's like, so first off, Earth-X, I mean, that is an old in canon comic book. Earth-X was always the Nazi Earth. And they even introduced a character from the in the show that is from the comics as one of the freedom fighters fighting against the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Russell Trump. He was the werewolf on the British version of Being Human.
Oh, okay.
He was Alonzo on the Doctor Who Titanic Christmas special.
Oh, yeah, because he was also he was in the Sherlock and the Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Yeah.
The guy with the wingspan on his ears.
Right.
Yes.
So he shows up as the Ray, a light-based hero.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And doing a southern drawl.
You know, actually, I've heard that several times, but British to southern is actually a remarkably easy step.
Yeah.
It's easier than the nasally New England-y sort of thing.
Right.
But because you look at... what's his name? The lead from Bill from True Blood.
Oh, right. Right.
So,
yeah. I felt they did a good job. And it was a good team-up episode. It was satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that moment. It's like, okay, fine. If this is what you're going to keep giving us, and remember, and again, it's that remembrance. Our heroes are heroes.
Yeah. It's a nice change, isn't it?
It is. So I am slowly making my way through the Punisher.
Yes.
In part because there's just a lot of competing things, so I don't have time to fully binge it. Also, it is dark enough and violent enough that even I need a break sometimes.
You know, that's saying something right there.
But what it is, and I've heard experts also talk about this. So I have friends who suffer from PTSD.
And yes, you do.
And I would highly recommend they not watch this. But it is, at its core, an examination of PTSD.
Well,
and how we treat our veterans.
I would respectfully suggest a slight edit to that.
Okay.
From the perspective of it is combat based PTSD.
True.
Because Jessica Jones is also
PTSD
with rabies.
Yeah.
And she never fires, you know, that's not combat. It's still legit.
Right. So, yeah. And again, it seems interesting that the Marvel Netflix series are the ones that are going to go into these deep. Well, they have the time.
They have the time
and the freedom.
Yeah. Because, I mean, hell. And going back to, you want to talk about characters on the spectrum, let's look at the Kingpin.
I want to say I heard that was an intentional portrayal by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, really?
To play the Kingpin as autistic. And again, it doesn't take away from his power.
No. It adds to his character and in a way that does not detract from his humanity.
Right. And again, let's look at the Marvel series deciding, let's remember that our villains are human. Even something as vile as David Tennant's character in Jessica Jones, that there is on some level. I think that Luke Cage with Diamondback lost it a little, but Cottonmouth, clearly. So this and
see, I'm sorry. Pardon me. Wrong one.
Never mind. Yeah, it's not delete, Iron Fist.
Delete.
No, we don't. Iron. You know what's funny? They came out with a 10 worst TV shows of the year, and Iron Fist was solidly on it.
Oh, as well it should.
You know what else was? Disjointed, the show I watched partway through and went, and
yeah.
I'm out.
Yep, the Cheech and Chong's The Reunion Tour.
Anyway, so yeah, Punisher is well worth it. I'm also watching, since we're talking about superhero shows, The Runaways on Hulu.
Okay.
Which is another Marvel property. And I believe we did mention it in the last episode, but with this property, it's teenage superheroes, and they're making a real effort to write the teenagers as teenagers.
What a concept.
And in the comic, the parents, since the thrust of the series is these are children who learn their parents are supervillains.
Okay.
The parents were not given a lot of depth beyond, we're bad guys. In this show, it's, we're bad guys, but let's explain why we're bad guys.
Well,
and it doesn't hurt that one of the parents is played by James Marsters, who is just just leaning into, again, that kind of depth of portrayal. He has the capability that he can play an engaging bastard.
Well, of course. He had how many years to perfect that on Buffy? But, you know.
So. Anyway. Anything on TV on your front?
Sadly, I mean, I have not been spending that much time in front of the television. I mean, we finally finished Fantasies of a Competent President. I mean, West Wing.
So, everyone, I know that Daniel and I have mentioned this before, but I think it's worth pointing out. This is the first time Daniel has ever watched The West Wing, a show that at this point I could not tell you how many times it is my comfort food television, has been for years. If I need something on in the background where I need to sound, I need to fill time, but I don't want to have a full commitment to an episode, I will throw on The West Wing. I am currently on a umpteenth rewatch in the middle or towards the end of season 2.
Yeah. No, I can totally understand how that is. I mean, I'm actually planning an immediate rewatch in the next little while to coincide with The West Wing Weekly.
Yeah.
And do the watch and listen sort of thing. Of course, the jaded bastard in me. Okay, there's our one for the episode. The jaded person in me wants to also pay attention to all the product placement, because after a while it just becomes, here, let's beat you over the head with it.
Well, that's how they get production money.
How about that?
It's interesting. So with West Wing Weekly, so West Wing now has a companion podcast series called West Wing Weekly, featuring Josh Molina, who is one of the stars of the West Wing.
Yep.
Joined in season 4, and a friend of his, Hershey K. Sherwood.
I'm glad you can pronounce that one, because that's too many consonants.
And I work with a lot of people from India.
How about that?
One thing I'll say to you, Daniel, as you listen to it, since you've already watched the series, you are now spoiler-proof. It's a flip of the coin in your situation as whether you listen to the episode, then listen to the podcast, then watch the episode, or vice versa. There is definitely a value of having them in close proximity to each other.
I figure I'm going to do the watch, then listen thing, if nothing else, because, well, yeah, go on. And yes, while he expounds upon this, in my own defense, I spent most of the 90s and the early 2000s having not regular access to television. And so, I mean, it was only, 2 years ago, maybe, that I sat down and actually burned through the entire series of Deep Space Nine.
True.
I remember it coming out in the early 90s, but I never was in a position where I could sit and watch it episodically and concurrently.
You know, that's what I might want to do a binge on. Again, I will fight people on this. Arguably the finest Star Trek series. And I'm a huge fan of Next Gen.
Yeah.
But there was a depth of storytelling on Deep Space Nine.
There is, and I mean, I've noticed, in personal opinion, that in the grand dichotomies of life, there is the Coke Pepsi, there is the Windows Mac, there is Star Wars Star Trek, but there is also specifically Deep Space Nine versus Voyager.
Yeah.
Because the two came out so close together, and they took markedly different approaches to their storytelling. And I could never get into Voyager. I may try and give it another try sometime. But for all intents and purposes, no, I'm firmly in the DS9 camp.
Yeah. So, moving away from television.
Okay.
There's not a lot in comics other than there's a big push because Snagglepuss is finally coming out.
Oh, yes.
So, this is one of the series coming out from DC's Hanna-Barbera adaptations that we've been anticipating, because it is being a launch off of a celebration of LGBTQ...
add in as many letters as you want after that, but LGBTQ was
comics.
Cool.
Because they are playing Snagglepuss as a gay playwright in the 1950s. Again, the beauty of the taking these characters and the new social relevant commentary.
Oh, yes.
I'm currently, when we get into books, I'm in the middle of reading the second Sandman Slim, as well as the working my way through Matt Young Mark's Father Mucking classics.
Yes.
But what I'm reading right now is the second volume of the Flintstones.
Oh, yes. I still need to pick that one up.
It is so surprisingly good. And I realized something in reading these later issues. The Fred of this new iteration of Flintstones is a far kinder man than the original Fred.
Interesting. Well,
they're no longer just doing it as a honeymooners pastiche.
I was going to say, I mean, that was the whole thing, is because the Fred of the cartoons was to the moon, Alice.
Yeah.
Sort of that 50s post-war aggressive macho man.
Yeah. And the Fred of the new Flintstones is essentially a Vietnam vet. A pastiche of that, who's also concerned of, am I actually being a good husband and father?
Wouldn't it be nice if more people could actually start paying attention?
Yeah, so it's, honestly, I had a friend who's working with me on Family Skeletons who is wanting to pick it up because the idea of doing social commentary via these characters fascinates them.
Can we perhaps veer into the podcast, seeing as you just mentioned that?
I think we're good to go to podcasts.
Okay. There are those three little words that every person loves to hear. You were right.
You say the nicest things.
Yeah. I sat down and started listening to EOS 10, and I've been having a lovely time listening to that. Really, really enjoying it. I still don't think I will ever take the leap into Welcome to Night Vale, simply because there are so many
episodes. It is a commitment at this point, yeah.
But something like EOS 10, where there's two seasons in and out, it's holding me over until I can burn through the entirety of Wolf 359 again from start to finish. So.
And EOS 10 is another one. It's been years since the last episode came out, but it's not a dead project.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, the creator comes back and says, hey, you know, I'm still here. We're still seeing what we can do. And we've mentioned this before. It's the beauty of podcasting. You know, we can sometimes, you know, our schedule right now has been erratic on getting our own episodes out due to life, but we're not stopping.
Oh, no.
And we still have a dedicated fan base. Hey, Thomas! there's a guy now I consider our number one fan.
Oh, excellent. Hi, Thomas.
Thomas, and he always retweets our episodes. And
aww.
He is the number one Fanboy News Network fan. Certainly the number one person who's not part of the immediate family and social circle.
Even better.
So, anyway, shout out to Thomas. But you know, even with erratic schedules, as long as you want to keep it going, you keep it going.
Yeah.
And we're kind of, in a lot of ways, we're a weird podcast in that we are.
What was your first clue?
In that we are a broader subject. A lot of podcasts, because with the idea of narrowcast, get very niche. I mean, my friend Jim, handsome boyfriend Jim from Don't Read the Latin, his podcast, Fire When Ready, is about the game Star Wars Armada.
And only Star Wars Armada.
And only Star Wars Armada. But that is the beauty in podcasting, of you can go that narrow. But with podcasting, the other thing and what we're talking about now is the renaissance of scripted narrative in audio format. And it's always that question, what do you call it? Do you call it great? Scripted podcast does seem to be becoming the standard nomenclature for this style.
What is it that they... Go ahead and talk.
But the... Because EOS 10, and if they come back, or they're still on my feed, I will happily listen to them. And I think they have a great theme song, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just announced this week, Marvel Studios, well, Marvel Productions, I guess, whatever the production of, some part of the Marvel Corporation is getting into scripted podcasts.
Oh, fun.
They just announced they are going to do their first scripted podcast called Wolverine the Long Night, starring Richard Armitage of The Hobbit.
Well, among many other things.
Many other things. As Wolverine.
Yes.
And as somebody who is working on producing one of these, I love that's happening because it shows the legitimacy of the venue. And sure, you know, you could have somebody, you know, it's that you get the big pot. It's like Ricky Gervais when he had his podcast. He was the biggest podcast. It didn't kill the little podcasters because that's not how podcasting works.
No, it is such a consumable. It's not even me. Okay, it's media, but it's such a consumable thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really easy with commutes and working out in the gym and everything else to burn through multiple hours and easily. I will add that I still kind of like radio play or audio drama because, yes, it's not on a radio, and yet it's that.
And they're not all dramas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I want to give a shout out to one I've only listened to sporadically, but I'm getting into more regularly. And I kind of feel bad because a friend of mine works on it. It's called The Incomparable Radio Show.
Okay.
I call it the technically the full name is The Incomparable Radio Theater. So there's a podcast called The Incomparable Podcast, and the guys who put that together decided to do a series of podcasts truly hearkening back to the heyday of radio theater.
Oh, nice.
So they have a segment that's a pastiche of The Shadow. They have Twilight Zone pastiches. They have Space Adventure.
Do they have like random musical numbers in between? So
not that I've noticed, good. But they do commercials.
Okay.
They create fake brands. But I would note that they do a really good job. I feel their scripts are smart. They're acting for their acting is stylized, but correctly stylized for the genre they're doing.
Okay.
Audio and sound effects are great. There are several times I picked up, that person probably was in a different room, but that's a quibble. The sound was still good. They're clever and fun.
Good.
So, and this is a shout out to my friend Monty Ashley, who is a member of that troupe.
Cool. Awesome.
So, those are some recommendations, I guess we can say, for those of you looking to, if you're interested in listening to some of these, until we get Family Skeletons out later next year.
Cough, cough, cough.
Hey, the scripts are ready. We're getting the recording schedule ready. This is happening.
Yep.
I'm always excited what else the market is going to bring. Once Wolf 359 is done, and after the unfortunate ending of Black Tapes,
yeah,
well, you know, it's looking for, well, what's next? Because these are my favorite, some outside of, you know, I either listen to media-based podcasts, you know, podcasts about media,
mm-hmm.
or I'm into the stories.
Cool.
And so it's always, what's next? And right now I've got a backlog of things I need to listen to. So fortunately, I've got some plane rides coming up in my near future that's going to take care of that.
For better or for worse, right?
So let's talk books.
Well, I was going to say, what you reading?
Well, I think I just told you what I'm reading.
What did you think of Sandman Slim?
Sandman Slim was great. Sandman Slim scratched the same itch as The Dresden Files.
Yeah.
Without being... I think the nice thing was it was using the same inspirations
mm-hmm.
as The Dresden Files, but going in a different direction. So it felt familiar, but not a carbon copy.
Oh, yeah. No, It's funny because every time I mention Sandman Slim mm-hmm. to someone, people say, oh, it's like The Dresden Files. And for me, maybe it's just me, but there is a large gap in my mind between the two. Other people, you need to get scissors in there. But I see a significant difference between the two.
I think that's fair. I think where it comes down to is it is noir-inspired urban fantasy.
True.
And that is true for both series.
Yes.
But they are very different characters.
Oh my, yes.
And I think Sandman Slim, again, builds a nice world. It builds some good stakes.
Bad pun, but...
Yeah. And, but again, a whole different cosmology, first off.
Oh yeah.
And the characters interact with the world very differently. So I am looking forward to reading the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
I had one slight moment of, I wouldn't call it cognitive dissonance, but I'm a fan of the TV show Lucifer.
Okay, yeah.
And when Lucifer shows up in Sandman Slim, mm-hmm. the way he's acting, I realized, oh God, I can just easily put the Lucifer from the TV show in as this Lucifer, and it works perfectly. The way he talks is exactly the same. They don't describe him, so it's easy to, he just says, it's Lucifer, you fill in the blanks from there.
Exactly.
So it's really easy to see Tom Ellis as I hope I didn't mangle the actor's name. Anyway, but to see the TV Lucifer in the Sandman Slim series.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. I freely admit I fanboyed all over the author when he was at Emerald City this last year. I have to say I really enjoyed that. I will give you advanced warning. Me personally, mm-hmm. after about Aloha from Hell was where I stopped reading the books. Mm-hmm. I know that there's at least one or two possibly after that. Yeah.
All right.
But so you've got at least a good four or five books, but still.
Okay.
But
what are you reading now?
Me?
Yeah.
Actually, for whatever reason, I've actually had a few moments extra time. I've actually read two books lately.
Okay.
One was The Wrong Stars by Tim Pratt. Okay. And Tim Pratt normally writes urban fantasy.
Okay.
But he wanted to try his hand at space opera. And I think he did a remarkably good job. It is, for lack of a better term, it's of the Scalzi variety of science fiction opera.
Right.
Or a space opera. In that the science doesn't hurt your head.
All right.
But there are fun characters and there is sharp dialogue. And, you know, it is a galaxy-sweeping event. So, I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, Tim Pratt's Wrong Stars. And then the one that I just started recently, I'm only about halfway through, and I think was a wonderful one that I think you would enjoy, mm-hmm. is a book by James Allen Gardner. And the title of the book is All Those Explosions Were Someone Else's Fault.
I love the title.
I know. There are several people that are like, I want to read the I want to read the book just because of the title.
Well, that sounds like something my sister would say to me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's because she probably has. Reader's Digest condensed version of that one is All Those Things That Go Bump in the Night.
Mm-hmm.
They basically went mainstream in the 80s. But that's the bad guys. That's the demons, the vampires, the werewolves, the blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And about 20 years after that, random people started developing superpowers. So it's almost as if the universe decided, well, you got the one, you get the other. The interesting part is that there is some, I mean, it's science fiction, go figure. There's political and sociological commentary. But all the darklings, mm-hmm. is what they called, the vampires, the whatever, are rich because they have to pay to get their immortality.
Mm-hmm.
All the sparks, so mm-hmm. you have the darks and the sparks, which I thought was a nice touch. All the superheroes, all the capes, all the, mm-hmm. the whatever, they're just born into it, or there's a random lab experiment gone wrong, or whatever, whatever, whatever. So it's a 1%, 99% commentary.
Of course it is.
On top of it all. So, but it is really fun, really enjoyable. You had mentioned over dinner the idea that there's the Wildcard series by...
Well, it's the shared universe edited by George R. R. Martin.
In his many moments of leisure. But I have to say that nowhere in George R. R. Martin's universe would a main character who is a gender-fluid Asian-Canadian... there was another hyphen in there. Oh, bisexual. So it's like...
Hey, it could happen, but I would be dark.
And it's George R. R. Martin, and he loves to write sex scenes, but not they're not that good. But no, this one is fun. This one is enjoyable. I'm about 100 pages into it, and I just keep reading because it's fun.
All right. Definitely an easy enough title to remember, or at least close to.
Exactly.
All of those explosions were somebody else's fault.
Were not my fault.
All right. Well, with that, we are pretty much at our normal time. So, episode 60. Here is to 60 more, I guess. Let's set our sights. Let's get through another 10.
I was gonna say, let's aim for 60. I don't know. 64, so it can be a Beatles episode. I don't know.
But with that, thank you for listening. If you want to drop Daniel or I a line, we can be reached at fanboynewsnetwork.com. You can just leave us a comment in the episode notes. We will be back, I don't know, some point in the near future. It'll happen.
Yes.
We are coming back preferably before... before Valentine's Day.
Oh no! As Jeff mentioned at the top, we are both dealing in industries where there is a holiday end of year rush. You for one reason, me for another. But suffice to say, I am the only person in my office who is only working 40 hours a week, and that's simply because I'm still in training.
Ah. Well, I'm looking forward to my post-Christmas coma. With that, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you in the near future.
Take care, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.